You might have thought it would never happen, but Switchcast is endorsing a transport company. Whether you're moving a rare collectible, a high-end sports car, or your personal luxury vehicle, Shaughnessy Overland Express delivers with precision, privacy, and respect. This isn't just transport, it's white glove care from pickup to delivery. For over 14 years, they've earned the trust of collectors, enthusiasts, dealers, and owners by offering unmatched service and personalized attention. You'll work directly with their experienced in-house team, ensuring a smooth and private experience without middlemen or surprises. Every shipment is protected with up to $3 million in cargo insurance, offering peace of mind for even the most valuable and rare vehicles on the road. In addition to their enclosed fleet, they've also established a trusted auto transport brokerage service, giving you access to a nationwide network of vetted open and enclosed carriers. Whether you need transport on a route they don't currently operate or their carriers are at full capacity when your schedule demands, they'll still get it done without compromising the Shaughnessy standard of excellence. Same professionalism, same personal touch, expanded flexibility. We are proud at Switchcast to endorse Shaughnessy Overland Express as the official transporter of Switchcast. Visit soexinc.com and tell them Switchcast sent you.
All right, can you start talking?
Check, check, check.
Yes, 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 I can.
Okay. Good.
I can say things. Meaningful things.
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves, Doug.
Listen, we're going to be optimistic tonight. When technology fails us,
whiskey will save
content. wisdom, not whiskey.
Okay. Step two of three is completed.
Ethan, would you like some Lagavulin? Or are you not a PD?
At this point, I would drink a campfire. All right, guys. Let's get this over with, I guess.
Come on.
Where's the positivity?
We are ready.
This is just, what a parade. Okay. Hang on.
Yes, we are back.
Oh.
Better late than never. Not said about celebrating anniversaries and birthdays, but live streaming, sure, we can do this. This is not News 6 San Diego or what network was Will Ferrell on? Ron Burgundy.
Yeah, there it is.
Yes.
I don't know.
Somebody will have that right at the ready. Apologies, patrons on our Patreon for coming in late. We were dealing with some unprecedented technical difficulties in 4 years of doing this. This is the stuff we kind of were scared about our very first live show back in 2021 and prepped. And after 3.5, 4 years, whatever we've been doing this, it seems like things go smoothly, but then you just run into stuff, technical glitches. So Ethan has got it sorted out. I think we are good to go. And we are continually working on improving the live stream quality for y'all because we want you to have a good experience. It is looking good. Okay, it's looking good so far. We're getting there. We're researching. Ethan over there is doing lots of work behind the scenes to improve the experience for the patrons. And we appreciate the patron patience. Patriotians.
Not so much. Look, I was sitting over here just looking at Porsches while he was struggling. It was really weird.
Porsche patron patience.
Well, I do love alliteration, but we've gone too far.
Yes, Ethan, though, I was thinking about the live stream thing, and I was on vacation last week in Maine, and there was a book in the lodge, the aluminum lodge in which we were staying. It said, Newbie's Guide to Airstreaming. And I thought, oh, maybe that would help.
Is that an airplane thing?
No.
That's a good joke. It's... An Airstream's like the trailer, right?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
It's the tin can.
That could help. There might be a nugget or two in there that would help this. I don't know.
That's the type of book that Hank would get you if he thought you needed help with the broadcast.
So, Ethan, I was thinking of you. You guys are always struggling every time I come over.
I thought about swiping it and just giving it to Ethan, but never knew how apropos it would be until tonight.
The timing of that, if you came down here while I was farting around with all this stuff and you handed me that, I think I would have went home. that would have been the last straw for the day. That would have done it.
Meanwhile, Tyler over here doesn't know how to use a weather app. He is literally doing the grandma and has a blanket over his legs.
Doug, I got to be honest. This might actually be the move. I'm so cozy right now. This is great. Oh, you can shame me.
It's not even that cold down here, but it's like 60 degrees out and he wore shorts and a t-shirt.
It was a mistake, ladies and gents.
Officially, welcome to Switchcast Season 6. I'm your host, Doug Tabbitt, here with my co-host, Tyler Sanders, and behind the scenes, our producer, Ethan Huffnagel. Boy, is this ever, I have a new line to describe our podcast, and this is very fitting tonight. Switchcast is the podcast where we know what we're talking about despite evidence to the contrary.
Nice. I like it.
Okay. If you have not signed up for Patreon yet, obviously you've heard that we're working through some bugs, but we do have an exclusive experience for the patrons. They can watch live, they can interact with us in between filming segments, ask their questions, or correct us when we are wrong. I shouldn't assume that our listeners always have questions for us or that we know the answers. It might be the opposite. You can lodge your criticism. And otherwise, please support our sponsors. That helps us out. And like, share, subscribe, comment on the episodes, anything you can do to help out with the algorithms. Tonight, what is fueling this podcast besides despair and technical difficulties?
No. We're being positive, Doug. Nothing is fueling it at the moment because I think we got a gift.
We got a gift from Devin Ruckus all the way from Vermont. He drove this in. The best off-the-shelf scotch ever, in my opinion.
So
very,
good.
Very peaty, smoky. Lagavulin 16 Isla single malt scotch whiskey.
You going to crack that bad boy open?
Yeah, I'll crack it open.
Let's get this going. I hope Devin didn't come out here only to give us a bottle of scotch. I mean, I'm not going to complain.
But. No, but, you know, we'll say he did because that is the level of expectation from the fans that from dedicated fans that we expect.
Do you not have a glass?
No, I don't.
I'm
watering tonight.
Watering tonight. Well, yes. I will. There's water in here.
Imbibe on my behalf.
Absolutely.
I got pulled over this week.
Oh.
The cop asked why I was going so fast, and I said, "Well, I stepped on an old pencil."
What?
I got a lead foot.
I couldn't get to the mic quick enough. Doggone it.
Yeah. Patreon topic this evening. Again, if you're a Patreon subscriber, you want to become one, we have special discussion topics just for the Patreon. Often they are more off topic or political or whatever. And I'm sure many of you have heard about, seen the news stories on the illegal immigrant, non-domicile CDL trucker who pulled a U-turn on a Florida highway through one of those, you know, authorized vehicles only, emergency vehicles only places. And he turned from the right shoulder to the left side on a busy highway, and somebody ran into him, and three people were killed in this
holy moly.
Move. It has, well, it's a big topic. It's a heavy topic for sure. So we're going to talk about that tonight on the Patreon, not right now, but it certainly bears relevance to topics we've covered before, like the executive order regarding truckers being required to speak English.
Yes.
Yes, and therefore read signs. That's part of it. Tyler.
Yes.
Well, Monterey happened this week, which is A town doesn't happen, but anybody in the car world knows that Monterey is the mecca for car enthusiasts. It has become more than just a Concours d'Elegance. It has become, well, the Quail anyway, has become kind of the release for all supercar prototypes, new releases. It's where the bespoke manufacturers go to showcase their new products.
Yes.
Because the regular automotive show, as we used to know it, like the Detroit Auto Show, where the manufacturers would showcase their new stuff, has all but died. Yeah. So Monterey has kind of become the de facto place for the specialty cars to be showcased, the concepts and stuff.
Yes.
You have some thoughts on that, though, as well, Tyler.
So I have never been to Monterey. I have a couple of friends who have gone. I think you've gone.
I have.
And
19 years ago.
Oh, man. And see, so, like, I feel like I have missed the boat on the good Monterey. Now, I'm saying this after I saw photos of an F50 GT and, well, all of those F50s, truthfully.
31 of them there, yes. I believe.
And the there was a yellow Diablo SV with the black graphics, which is one of my childhood poster cars that just made. So there's incredible things to be seen. And all the photos of what you see makes me excited. Mm-hmm. But then I was watching some YouTube videos where a particular YouTuber that I like to watch was doing kind of showcasing what we see throughout Monterey. And then I saw the gaggles and gaggles of people walking through traffic, chasing to get the same terrible photo of a Sesto Elemento and like all of
the photo is terrible because the car is. Well, I'm just going to throw it out there. That thing is hideous.
It's not great looking, but I think it's cool. Like what it is.
It's
is
got sweet. A face for radio.
But I think, like, I saw somebody online describe it as the TikToker broccoli head kids have ruined Monterey. Because, like, I would love to exist in the same space, but it seems to be getting more and more intense. There's more and more people showing up, more and more people trying to get, it's just holding their phones content. Up, trying to get content. And, like, is what Monterey used to be, no, is it dead? Is it a new thing now that is just kind of worse objectively, more expensive, a worse time to exist in, and I've missed the boat?
Well, I guess I could go back to our discussion about all of car culture being impacted by social media.
Yeah.
I don't want to say ruined, we'll just say impacted. It has its pros and cons, but certainly the, you know, cameras chasing everything around is different. And
like I saw in this video I was watching, somebody run into stopped traffic. They didn't run into like moving cars, but it was at a stoplight, run with their phone to catch a photo of the Sesto Elemento before it pulled away. And I'm like, what does that photo do for you? Like what, just getting to see it in traffic should be good enough. Like, why do you need to disrupt traffic, endanger yourself just to get a crappy blurry photo?
So that,
like you can see photos of cars on the internet.
You're right. So 20 years ago, you couldn't easily see photos of cars on the internet. I don't think social media was a thing. I think, yeah, Facebook was still barely on the scene. I had a MySpace 20 years ago. Yes, we had digital photography at the very least. When I was a kid being a car spotter, that would go to shows and chase cars down to get a picture. It was because literally if I didn't take a picture, I wouldn't be able to see it again.
Yes.
I wouldn't be able to relive that memory except as a memory. Cause I'd go to Rite Aid and drop my photo off to get developed. And a week later I'd get it back. Now, like I hardly ever take pictures on my phone at car shows because I can see 73 pictures of the car again if I want to.
Yes. And the experience of seeing it with your own eyes, of hearing it run, hopefully, and drive. Like, that was one of the coolest things about Amelia on the few trips I've done with you guys is, like, we saw, I think it was a 917 driving in traffic. It was so loud and so cool. And, like, that was, and it was a fleeting few seconds. But that is seared into my brain because I wasn't focused on capturing it on a phone.
I think you still need to go to Monterey. I think that there's a both and to this. Is you could say, well, Monterey's been ruined because it's so overrun, but the popularity of it comes because Monterey has continued to grow and grow and grow in the wake of other car shows, even Concours events, going by the wayside and contracting. So I think they've done a great job of taking what was already one of the greatest car events on the planet and building it up. Now, it's not what the old guard may like. And we can yell at the sky and say, oh my gosh, there's too many kids with phones. But hey, that's also the next generation of kids that are going to be interested. Maybe now they're manifesting it in making content or whatever, but they'll grow up.
I hope
maybe.
So.
And then they'll buy paint sample Porsches and
it is
talk
amazing.
About how rare they are. But
it is amazing how mundane a 911 looks after a week's worth of Monterey content. Mm-hmm. That's not why I have one. I don't care, but it's crazy to see the photos and videos. And I'm like, oh, that's just 911. It could be like some $1 million Singer or something, but it still just looks like a 911 when it's next to some Pagani,
yeah,
Huayra or
I was on the opposite coast of America. I was in Maine during Monterey, which is usually where I am and why I don't go to Monterey. And the funny thing was, I was at my sister's gas station, Ralph's Got Gas.
Nice.
In the middle of nowhere, and two 69 Camaros pull up that were, you know, Z28s, lightly modded. One had good paint, the other one had lots of Bondo. And it was like, we were all getting excited about that. It's like, oh man, two Camaro Z28s. I'm sitting there going, the irony. Even in that moment, they were special to me. A Camaro Z28 isn't that special. I mean, 69 Camaro is always, it's like the best looking one they've ever made. But it's just like, even in that moment, I was like, this is cool. And we talked to the owners and we got excited about it. Whereas at a hoity-toity car event, they would be looked down upon, rejected. You know, so it's all context. But yes. That was... pure car moment for me.
But those pure car moments are why I'm still a car guy. I'm so over all of the social media laden stuff that I just want to have a good experience and just exist in the moment.
I think what you have to do for Monterey is what we do for Amelia, is you have to make it your own. You can't try to do everything and see everything and take pictures of everything. You have to ignore the crowds. You rent a house with friends, which in Monterey may not be possible, but you rent a house with friends, you pick the events you're going to go to, and you just see what you want to see and take that part in. And not so much worry about the FOMO and everything else, the craziness that's going on. Because you can only do so much.
Yeah, we'll see. Maybe next year. I would like to go. Now, again, I saw the photo of that F50 GT and was like, oh. Like one of my holy grail things to lay my eyeballs upon.
Did you hear they have, there's a verified offer for $30 million on the F50 GT. Ugh. Rumors of a $100 million offer, which I don't believe. But the $30 million, I
absolutely
totally am on board with.
But it was running and it was moving, and that's the stuff I like.
Heck yes. Well, we are fully warmed up at this point, and I think it's about time to move on to our main topic. We will come back to Monterey a little bit in our second topic. But we'll table that for the moment.
As we're stalling,
we're pausing for effect here.
Yes. Ethan was too busy
talking
eating
espresso and ice cream here. I forgot a.
Oh, I was pretty. I haven't had too much whiskey, so that was actually pretty good. So.
Oh, I told a joke at our friend's house the other day, and the like 12-year-old boy that was in the family. Nobody else laughed, and this was like my third joke, and he finally laughed at one, and then he goes, I'm actually angry at myself that I'm laughing.
That's how you know you did a good job. Oh, I love joke. When I can get my fiance to just like give me the side eye after making a joke, oh, it just warms my heart. Like, I know I did a good job.
If Aaron laughs, I put it in my joke notebook because I'm like, you know it's
this
good.
Works.
You know it's good. Yeah, that's my joke notebook is where our opening line came from. We know what we're talking about despite evidence to the contrary. I had that.
Oh, I like it.
Who knows when it came to my brain, but I wrote it down.
The Sheffield brand was recently revived by Jake Turkbus, an owner of an original Sheffield all-sport diver he received from his parents in 1970 when he was just 11, beginning his love of watches. As an adult, Jay used his extensive expertise in product development and marketing to revive the brand that started it all. He set out to develop watches with a high level of quality and specification at a value price. His first effort, and a successful one, on July of 2023, was the debut of the Sheffield All-Sport Diver 1. It had the kind of build and movement that much more expensive watches use, and his debut price of $108 was equivalent to the $13 his parents paid in 1970. Since that debut, Sheffield has expanded to a wider range of automatics and chronos, many designed around vintage Sheffield dials of the 60s. The Sheffield well of clever and unique design remains his inspiration, as well as maintaining the goal of high quality, very affordable range of automatic and quartz watches. Sheffield watches, value on merit, not just price. I love mine, so get yours at sheffieldwatches.com and be sure to mention you found them on Switchcast.
Let's talk about scams. Why not? That's our bread and butter here is car dealer scams. We don't like them.
They keep happening, though.
Keep happening. And, gee, it's kind of a similar story every time. This particular one is BUL Auto, Bull Auto. I guess it is Bull Auto because they have a logo of bull with horns, although the guy missed an L in there. And they are based primarily out of Albany, but also Jacksonville, Florida. And there are multiple lawsuits against them currently, as well as investigations by the police and federal authorities, allegedly. They are being sued by Stellantis, who holds $4 million in a quote-unquote master loan that it provided to the dealership in order for them to fund inventory. But they also hold a security interest in all of Bull Auto's assets. They are being sued by a couple of customers. And boy, is it not good.
Yikes.
Cars have gone missing, right? So cars that were supposed to be bought with this floor plan financing were not at the dealership when the finance company went out to do their audit. Apparently, according to this article on MSN, which is very, very good, detailed article, the dealership, and this is a new one, I had to think about how this worked, actually, because I'm not a scammer, so I don't think like a scammer. 23, according to this article, 23 vehicles were sold, quote, out of trust, which means that the dealership sold them without paying back the loans on the cars.
I didn't even know there was like a phrase for that. Out of trust.
I learned that official phrase just now as well. Seven of them were sold to third-party dealers and then leased back. Now, that's a new one, right? So they sold them. They had a lien on the vehicle, or at least a security interest was held on the vehicle. Whether or not the floor plan company placed an official lien on it, probably doubtful. Floor plan companies usually don't do that. But there's a lien on the vehicle over here. They sell it to another dealership. That dealership then likely gets financing on their end. So there's two people that hold security interests, unsecured security interests, if that makes any sense, on either end, which is crazy to me because typically floor plan companies require you to send them the title. So this is all nuts. But I guess they sold these cars, didn't pay off the loan, sold them to another dealer, and then had the dealer lease them back. So they're making payments to a different dealer just so they could have the cars on their lot so that they were there when the floor plan auditor came out.
I was wondering, I was like, why would they be paying to lease that? I get it now. But like, so many like layers and hoops.
But they're still paying the original, the loan to the floor plan company too. So to me, this makes no sense, right? Typically, and we've talked about these scams in the past, there's one of two reasons why people are doing this. One is they have a ridiculous delusional belief that this will work out in the end, that they can turn this around and, oh, I just need more cash flow. I need more time. I can make this next deal. The market's going to go up on this car, whatever their belief is, that I'm going to make so much money that I can pay off this mess. Or two, they have a fraudulent intent and they are not intending to pay off any of this. They're just doing this to build up their Ponzi scheme and walk with a whole bunch of cash that they've taken.
Does it happen that they actually get to walk though? Because this dude seems to be in a lot of trouble.
That's a really good question. Some people who have done this in the past have not had criminal charges filed against them, only civil. Most of the recent ones, including Clay Tom of CNC Exotics, have ended up getting criminal charges filed against them at some point or another. Now, it's not a violent crime. It's a white-collar financial crime. So some of them may spend a few years in prison and then come out and they have a bunch of money hidden somewhere, Cayman Islands, however they do it. And they maybe just say, okay, well, shoot, a few years in prison is worth it to pull off this scam and have a bunch of money. An interesting thing to note about this, so right now there have not been any criminal charges filed, but there are a number of civil actions against the owner of Bull Auto, Vladimir Rangulov. It's interesting to note, though, that he has homes in Albany, New York, and in Jacksonville, Florida. Jacksonville, Florida, if it's his primary residence, Florida has a pretty nuts homestead law that protects your primary residence in Florida with a few stipulations against any civil action or debt collection.
Oh, so everything could go but the house.
Right, which is why, it's not the only reason why, but it's why you see so many massive multi-million dollar mansions on postage stamp lots down in southern Florida. Yes, it's also beautiful down there, but it's a great place to hide a significant amount of equity if you're concerned about legitimate or illegitimate claims against you. Obviously, people of means want to legitimately protect their assets, and so this is a good way to do it. But then there's also people like Rangulov who have shady dealings, allegedly shady dealings, that they need to protect themselves from. And so this may be a preemptive way of saying, I'm going to bury a bunch of equity down in an expensive home in Florida. Now, one of the rules is if you're within city limits, the property cannot be more than a half acre.
Okay.
Outside of city limits, I think that it's up to 165 acres. So that may be where a significant amount of money went. Now, I consulted with a Florida attorney from Wright Law to get some clarification on this, and he responded with this. Because I asked about if there's criminal action against him, is his home still protected? Or is it only protected from civil?
Gotcha.
And his opinion was, if they can prove that you used criminally obtained funds to purchase the civil asset, whether it's a home or not, they can execute a seizure on it. Otherwise, a civil judgment is not chargeable in bankruptcy, which does not take your home. I think I misquoted that slightly. But anyway, it would only, if the feds can prove that he, first of all, did criminal acts and then used the proceeds to purchase his home, then they could take his home in Florida. But otherwise, it's pretty safe.
Okay.
If it's his primary residence. So anyway, that's not where the primary part of this topic, but it's just interesting, right? Scammers gonna scam, and they're always looking ahead, looking at ways of protecting themselves from crap that they do.
I tell you though, it's got to the point where the feds got involved in this. I'd be mighty puckered if I was this guy. Like, you've been found, you've been had. not been had, but you're not going to have a good time.
Yes. Yeah. And so he was also doing things like selling cars to people, not paying off the loan, so they never got their titles. Or in one instance, he sold a car to two different people and just never sent them the car.
Yeah. So in one of these articles, there was a guy who traded in, I think it was a Bentley and a Gallardo, and then put cash on top to purchase another car. So in this case, that person is out.
Everything.
The equity, the cash, the goods.
Yep.
Gone.
His loans weren't paid off on the trade-ins, and he never got the title for the car he bought because the loan wasn't paid off to the other person.
And, like, there's no way of getting that back, right?
Probably not.
Oh, my God.
Probably not. It's very, very difficult.
Look, I don't have the kind of money to have a Lamborghini and a Bentley, but my God, if I tried to make a deal on a car and I lost everything I put into it, just poof, I would be, like, I'd still be okay because I'm not going to put my entire life into it, but, like, holy moly.
Here's another thing he did. This is crazy. This is from a news4jax.com article, local Jacksonville news outlet, and it covers this one client of his who had bought and sold a lot of cars with him, built up a level of trust, and then it seems like that this guy had done deals that were profitable. So, you know, he bought a car from the dealership and, oh, hey, you can make money on this. They bought it back for more. So he's, and whether or not that was legitimate or a Ponzi scheme to get him to do this again, we don't know. But let's be honest, the exotic and collector car market has been increasing a lot in the last 5 years. So it's possible that he just got some good buys. However, this is Peter Nassar that was the client, and Nassar got a call from Bull Auto about purchasing a McLaren 720S, and apparently he was able to buy it significantly below market value, in theory, $260,000, which actually seems like a high price for 720S. But anyway, it never got registered in his name, but before he figured that out, Bull Auto called Nassar and said, oh, hey, I have a buyer for you that you can make money on this, so I need the car back.
Mm.
Well, Nassar never got that money for it, and Bull Auto kept making up excuses. Oh, well, the financing fell through. Like, does this sound familiar yet?
Oh.
Been down this road before with other scammers. And in the meantime, Bull Auto offers Nassar a Rolls Royce, and it's quoted in the article as this: Rangelov, I can't pronounce any of these names. Rangelov approached him with another opportunity to buy and flip another expensive car, a Rolls Royce Spectre.
Okay, so like, fool me once, you know, whatever. So like, this guy going back the second time, probably his fault, but like. And I feel like this scenario is not terribly likely to happen to someone like myself. I'm not spending enough money on a car for somebody like this to take it. But, well, maybe they could take advantage of me. How do you sniff this out?
Well, it says here, Nassar agreed to buy and flip the Rolls Royce, even though the McLaren hadn't gotten paid back for that yet. But only if Rangelov would sign a promissory note agreeing to repay the loan, which is pretty much worthless.
But it makes you feel good.
Yes. Rangelov also had or obtained a franchise with Karma Automotive, a small-time franchise. My guess is that he did that in order to gain legitimacy. It's certainly easier to get banks with whom you can finance or from whom you can borrow money. It's easier to get insurance if you are a quote-unquote franchise dealer. So you pick a little tiny franchise that doesn't cost a whole lot to get, and that opens up a lot of doors. Now, the opposite may be true. Maybe Bull Auto just really wanted to sell Karmas, thought it was a big profit opportunity, and they spent so much money meeting the standards for this franchise that he was having to, well, not having to, but in his eyes, having to play these games with cash flow to try to make it long enough to make money off of the Karma franchise. So, again, we don't want to, well, we'll speculate on intent here, but we're not going to assign intent one way or another. But he went down the same road that seems like all of these scammers go down, whether or not they set out to be scammers in the beginning. But you asked a question. How do you avoid this?
Yeah, like if I'm going to buy a car from, you know, some cool sporty car I'm excited about, like obviously there's some things that would throw me off, but there is a point at the end of the deal where things are in motion.
Yeah. Well, you can ask for a copy of the title. That's a good one to see if there's a title there. If they haven't paid it off yet with a lien holder, you could ask for proof that they've paid it off. You could look at their Google reviews, although in this case, it doesn't matter because Buell Auto Sales and Service, used car dealer in Albany County, New York, has 276 reviews with an average rating of 4.8.
Oh, that passes the 4.5.
Dude, there were zero recent negative reviews that indicated anything like this was happening.
Whoa.
But those can be manipulated. They can't. There are companies, I get solicited by companies every day trying to get me to buy good Google reviews, pay to get my negative ones removed. I won't do it. Not doing it. I don't think that's fair play, but some people do. This may come up later in the podcast. Another way you can avoid it. I know you're smarter than this, Tyler, but we keep seeing this. This guy, Nasser, should, if any dealer comes to you with an opportunity where you can buy a car and make money, that should be an immediate red flag, because walk if the dealer away. Has the money, they're going to do it. That is very, very suspect. I know some people that that's worked out for, but my goodness, don't partner up with a car dealer in that way. Just buy the car, own the car.
Like, if it's too good to be true, it probably is. As I think really ringing true, a lot more than it used to. Like, why would the dealer do all the work and pass some of the profits on to you for holding the money? It doesn't make any sense. Walk away.
Unless they don't have the money to do it.
Yeah.
Yep. The crappy part of all this, though, is that these scams have essentially ruined my business.
But wouldn't they, like, enhance your business because you're a stand-up guy with a great inventory? Okay.
They haven't ruined my business. They've ruined my consignment business. I can no longer consign cars because we cannot get insurance for cars that we don't have physical title to. And the underwriter will not explicitly say why, but when I read articles like this and all of the scams I've covered, they're almost all with consignment cars.
Really?
Almost all of them. Yes, so, they also have a floor plan aspect to them, but it's a lot harder to scam a floor plan bank because they come out with tow trucks really, really quickly, whereas consigners, you can buy months and months of time with their cash with excuses. So even
if you have title in hand, if it's not signed over to Switch Cars, and in the state of Ohio, as we have learned, converted into a Switch Cars title, you can't sell it.
I am not insured in that scenario because what they want to avoid the liability of these massive lawsuits of me doing a, you know, burn the barns type of, you know, take everybody down with me type of deal, because whether or not they are liable, the insurance company becomes liable or at least has to defend themselves against this. Right? Because all these court actions, litigation is extremely expensive, and the insurance company has to pay to litigate themselves out of these types of situations.
Wow.
So for them, it's not worth the risk. And they're not the only ones that are refusing this type of coverage. It's not just me. It's other types of shops as well. So yeah, it sucks for the individuals who have lost directly in these types of scams, but they affect even more than that, because every scam, every frivolous lawsuit, everything like that then has a trickle effect, and it's starting to affect more people, and it's affecting me directly. So anyway, if you'd like to sell us your car, we can buy your car. With that, moving to the wall of shame, as if this one segment wasn't one giant wall of shame for Bull Auto, comes from the Hybrid Sienna Club on Facebook. This is a good one. Somebody posts Antoinette. I think that's a woman, safe to assume. Bought my 2022 Hybrid Sienna 2 days ago. Can't find fuel for it, not even with Google or GasBuddy. Worried I'm just slowly ruining it with any other kind of fuel. Advice, please.
But
she's looking for hybrid gas.
Technically, you could consider ethanol-based fuel as hybrid because there's dinos and corn in there. That could, she might be onto something. Yikes. Big yikes. Switch Cars is the enthusiast dealership where we buy, sell, and consign only cars that we like ourselves. Check out our handpicked inventory online at switchcars.com and mention Switchcast for special pricing. You can find more information online at switchcars.com or come visit our showroom in beautiful Twinsburg, Ohio, where you can experience the Switch Cars difference.
Tyler, you brought up earlier in the evening about the perceived frustrations with Monterey and how big everything's become.
Perceived, Doug, I am frustrated.
Okay, well, I'm frustrated at how unaffordable everything's become.
Oh, yes.
But before we go down a negative road, we're going to talk about tonight the $25,000 or less cars that are still really, really cool for the rest of us who can't bid $25 million at Monterey. And this is a thing we've been asked about multiple times. Yes. Even this week, somebody asked me, hey, I've got a 30K budget, all-wheel drive car. I want something that's not a Subaru, not an Evo, something reliable but fun. I've got an answer for that person.
That's
in
hard.
Here.
It that's is really hard.
But I came up with one. But back to our frustrations with Monterey. Let's look at some of the crazy results out there this week. One, we do need to follow up on our guess, the Cannonball Dino owned by Jack May,
yes,
that won the Cannonball in 1975. Yes, five. Regular Dinos sell 500K plus minus. This one had a lot of miles on it, so we'd say maybe 400-ish would be a fair market value. There was a Dino that sold close to or maybe for $1 million at Monterey. Big, big money. But our guess, my guess, I believe, was 650. Ethan, did you pull up those numbers? Tyler's guess was $600,000 as to what it would sell for. And it sold, according to the Hammer Price app, for $660,000.
Woo!
So, but before I celebrate my victory, that is including the buyer's premium. So it hammered for $600,000.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
We're
I
getting
know the
pretty
car
good
market
here.
Sometimes a little
yes.
bit.
One of the deals to be had, a 1992 Lamborghini Diablo with just 9,600 kilometers. Low estimate was 280. It sold for 230 plus fees.
Does that have like the 5-head gauge cluster?
Like yes, really, yes, the big one. There was a couple other Lambos that sold quite strong. Let's see. A 2011 Roof RT Roadster was bid to $800,000, which was below its low estimate of $995,000, although I can see why. It looks like a soft window Targa. It's very, very weird. It is a Targa body, but with a convertible behind the Targa bar, and it's not a good look on a modern car. A 97, talk about cars getting crazy. Ferraris were mental at Monterey. 97 Ferrari F355 Spider, which is the least desirable body style, but only had 762 miles, sold for $335,000, including buyer's premium.
Do you think that needs the belt service?
Probably.
Holy moly.
Yes. Yes.
My blood is boiling,
and
Doug.
A yellow Ferrari F50 sold for $8.4 million.
What? Ah, yeah, yeah.
Plus buyer's premium. So I am officially out of the F50 market. I've been out of the F50 market for my entire life, but I'm officially out now. Can't afford it. So let's look at the positive. What can you afford for 25 grand or less? Anybody with a job can get a loan for 25K. I don't advocate that, but
it worked for me.
Anybody with a good job and a little bit of savings should be able to buy a fun car for less than 25K. But
what I think is what I have seen a lot is everybody focuses on the attention grabbing, the big numbers, the trendy stuff. Like, yes, I would love an air-cooled 911 because they look really cool in photos on Instagram with a cup of coffee. But let's be a little reasonable. These cars that I think Doug, actually, I don't know what Doug picked. The cars that I have, the handful that I've picked out, I think are a great way to enjoy the car hobby, to be excited about it, to hang out with like-minded people and enjoy cars without focusing on everything that is $500,000.
Yes. And these are not, oh, these are poised to go up in value. This is not Haggerty's next big thing list or bull market list or whatever they call it. They are good cars, which means they may appreciate, but that's not our concern. Are they cool? Are they unique? There are no Porsche 911s on this list because you really can't get one under 25 grand other than, I think, a 996 Cabriolet or a really high mile.
You could probably get my car for about 25K.
Well, I didn't put any 911s on this list. But
I didn't either because I wanted this to be... Now, I'm not like some hipster kind of like you've never heard of these before. I don't know more than you do for the most part, but I wanted this to be something other than the typical options.
All right, let's fire through them. My first one is a Porsche 914 Hot Rod. You can still get a modified 1.8 or 2 liter or 1.7, whatever. But if you get like a 2 liter swapped or even somebody that's built it into a 2.2 in a non-original 914, we've sold a few of them for less than 25 grand. I think those are, they're ugly, but they are super fun to drive and just hilarity for less than 25 grand.
Oh, I think they look pretty cool. E55 AMG or any other late 90s, mid 2000s AMG car doesn't have to be a fit. I think they're all a little bit cheaper than that. Potentially expensive to maintain.
We sold a nice one for 21, 22 grand recently.
Every time I see one, it sticks out to me. It looks so classic.
That is a
so
super
good
sedan. Yep. Corvette.
Yeah.
You see this coming?
Yeah.
C4 Grand Sport. Oh. They are creeping. It is getting difficult to find one under 25 grand, but I love that car. It's the last year of the C4, six-speed manual or the automatic, coupe or convertible, blue with the white stripe down the center, just like the original Grand Sport. And I think that's just a cool limited C4 that's kind of collectible.
I think you could also get yourself an awesome C5 in a cool color. Fairway green, something off.
Yeah.
Like you don't need like a typical red, even light carmine red would be just an interesting color, can really stand out. And I think I loved my C5 in a very interesting color. And it's
you
a good
could
option.
Get a pace car.
Yeah.
For under 25. Bentley Arnage.
And really?
Thanks. Yes, Bentley. I would love one of those. I hate the maintenance, but they are such a cool big body luxury sedan. Not much better if you want to go to dinner and maybe even like hire your friend to pretend to be chauffeur and feel really wealthy. And thanks to Tim Neely for this nerd knowledge. You want the 00-02 with a single turbo 6.75 liter because the later twin turbo ones had what he described as self-machining camshafts.
Ooh.
For which there's no real fix. But
nice.
Yeah, man, that's peak early 2000s luxury.
So good.
That is 04 rich on a 25 budget. Literally 2025, 25. Oh, there's our...
It's all coming together.
Yeah, it's 25 under 25. That's our title.
I think it's 03 to 06, the Pontiac GTOs.
Ooh,
this
yeah.
could just be my need
with
for speed.
With a 6 liter.
Not, yeah, like, yeah. Oh my God. I think they look great, even if they look a little bar of soapy. It's very of that time, and I kind of want one.
Okay. That's a good pick. It's a good pick. Good Aussie vehicle there.
Gotta
Maserati Grand Sport. Again,
oh,
suggestion
okay.
by Tim Neely. I did consult Tim Neely and Myron Vernis, our resident wacky car experts. And Maserati Grand Sport. It is the Grand Sport is the only one of the 4200s that had a balanced and blueprinted engine. And okay. it's actually, so it's a Ferrari engine, right? For all the 4200s. But it's timing chain instead of timing belt.
Nice.
Like what was in the 360. And it's its own engine, but manufactured by Ferrari.
Okay.
And it is a dry sump engine, but then they did the cross plane crank as opposed to the flat plane crank. So it has a different sound profile than the 360s and the 430. So it's like own little unique engine that was made over at Ferrari. And the Grand Sport's got the really special engine. Couldn't get them in a manual. So if you want a manual, you could get a 4200 GT manual. And that would be cool too. But it's like, again, 04 rich on a 25 budget.
That's all. Oh, that's good. I'm going to go maybe a little bit more basic. A New Edge Mustang Mach 1.
Okay.
You get the hood that moves because it's got the little the scoop that comes out. There might be bad rap with some Mustangs, but I think if you get a really good one, interesting. I don't see a ton of Mach 1s. You're going to have a good time. They're
Heck
apparently
yeah.
great cars if you like how they look.
Here's our answer to the all-wheel drive question.
Oh.
Toyota Celica GT4.
Can you get those for under 25?
Yes, all of them.
Really?
Even the like Tommy Mäkinen edition.
Really?
The RC, whatever they call it.
Yeah.
Like fifth, sixth generation, the last two. They're super cool cars.
Those are sick.
They're not all JDM, so you can get them in left-hand drive. But if you want to be super cool, you can get a JDM one. Wide body flared fenders. Turbo, 230 horsepower, I think it is, all-wheel drive. It's a legit homologated WRC car for less than 25 grand. Like, I was researching these for the podcast. I'm like, I think I might want one of these for a winter car. Like,
awesome.
I just sold myself on one of them.
Yeah, no, that's yeah. sick.
Heck, yes. And along those lines, Toyota reliability, but other end of the spectrum, a V12 Toyota Century.
Ooh,
I'd take any Toyota Century, but the V12s are now eligible for import, have been for a few years, actually. That is absolute peak obscure luxury with reliability to go with it.
So I also think vaguely related, because I think the Century is more of a cruiser. You know, I wanted to think of things that maybe aren't just enthusiasts like sporty cars. You can get some amazing looking like 50s convertibles for under 25. So what prompted me to think of this...
I wasn't going
to
go there, but okay, let's hear this.
So I got a buddy of mine
Uber's
who likes...
cars are getting cheap.
They are, but that's kind of the point, is like, if you want to cruise in like a really classy, big old boat, that is a type of car enthusiast, and those things are wildly cheap. I thought they would be like all 50K plus. Now, if you want like a woody, like Chrysler Town and Country situation, you're going to spend 35 or 40. But you can get some cool stuff from all
but
of the
not
manufacturers.
In 5 years from now, they're only going down in value.
But I think we forget to go back far enough
mm-hmm.
to those kinds of cars that aren't as prized anymore because the real enthusiasts are starting to age out.
That is a hot take. Yeah, and I guess if you go back even farther, there's a lot of 20s and 30s cars that can be had easily under 25 grand.
You're not going to carve up a Canyon, but if you just want to cruise around in style,
yeah,
it's an option.
It's a piece of art.
Yes.
Yes. Very cool. Let's see. I'm going to go with SN95 Cobra. I would take the early 5-liter ones, even though they're less horsepower, or I go for a 96 Mystic Cobra. Nothing like nostalgia in a friggin', you know, color shifting Mustang. And along the Ford lines, also an SVT Lightning. Those are getting real tough. Second gen, those are getting tough to find under 25, but man, 5.4 liter supercharged V8 and no weight in the rear. You can do burnouts for
weeks. So good. Speaking of Mustangs, you can actually get some late 60s Mustangs that aren't anything crazy special, no Shelbys or nothing, but you can actually get a decent looking late 60s Mustang for $25,000 or less.
Bondo Queens, maybe.
Bah, it works.
Straight six.
Yes. It's still cool. Like I remember watching all the Hemi Cudas and Shelbys go for like $1 million on Barrett Jackson. So the fact that some realm of those cars are getting cheaper again because of the aging problem, it's kind of cool.
Heck yeah. Aston Martin DB7. Ooh. Not the V12 Vantage, but the inline six.
Yes.
You can still get them if you try. Under $25,000. People, when they're selling them, they're very proud of them. They're like British Corvette owners, but you can absolutely find them under $25,000.
Heck yeah. I think this might still be slightly possible, but it's going to have a ton of miles. There are some Honda S2000s under $25,000.
Oh yeah, that's a good car.
A little bit of maybe a basic choice, but S2000s are great.
Very basic choice. Along that lines, I'd say the BMW Z4 M Roadster or Coupe.
Ooh.
They're not the prettiest cars, in my opinion, but they are a ton of value for the money. Inline six engine instead of the dinky little four in the S2000, so you get more of a proper European experience with a nice sound.
What about all my revs, bro? Goes to nine or whatever. I don't
cool.
know.
Cool. Sounds weird at nine.
Can you get like a Z3M as well for that?
Yeah.
Oh, man, yeah. Those are sweet.
Not a clown shoe, but you could get an M Roadster all day long under $20,000.
Man, I remember when clown shoes
maybe, were 25. Well, maybe not an S54, but you can get an S52 Roadster. Yeah.
Which one's rarer, Doug? last thing for me, very, very basic choice, but I cannot doubt that this is the answer because they're great cars. I think you can still get I don't think you can get an S, but you can get a 987 Cayman or Boxster for under 25, can't you?
Yes. Still? Yes, you can.
They're amazing. It's Porsche. They sound good. I saved that for last because it's the most basic and boring.
It is,
but it
so
does
basic,
work.
But it's a lot of car for the money. I got two more for you. Peugeot 205 GTI.
Ooh.
Highly regarded as the best hot hatch of the era by all the experts. That's a great choice under $25,000. And another roadster, the R171 Mercedes SLK 55 AMG. You have a 5.4 nice. Liter V8 stuffed into a tiny car. It's like the modern Sunbeam Tiger. Love it, and they're great looking. Now, if you want to get a custom plate on any of your sub $25,000 cars
there
that tells people what you're driving, you would be considered having a plate to sample. Oh. And if we saw your plate and wanted to guess your car on the game, that's what we do here. Our sign made for us by a big fan of the show, Ed Krakowiak, I think. I may never get that right. And the game itself invented by and sponsored by Solon Spine. That's run by Dr. Hoover, and you can check them out at solonspine.com. That's like Solon, Ohio. Tyler, you were admittedly weak off your game last week.
I did a bad time, guy. It was not... I don't know what was going on.
I've had an off day.
I didn't sleep well.
Let's see if you can get the ones I got. And yeah, see how you also gave me some real layups last week. So I feel like you are poised to just come out and just bury me. So what do you got?
I have first one. Say the E.
Save E?
Say the E.
Say the E. Oh, I'm going to regret that. I don't have time to go through all the car names.
Well, Doug is thinking. Doug gets a lot of stuff sent to him over Instagram because he's very, very popular in the internet. But if you wanted to send some things to me, head on over to switchcast.live and there'll be a little button, a little page to go to submit me some license plates that you've seen on the road or on your own car. Everything that I say, just about everything I say every week is from the listeners, and boy, do I have some good ones today. So
Ethan has figured this vehicle out.
Because the E, it is Ethan is my name.
I don't know
the specific vehicle, but it has to be Porsche something, right?
Yeah, he's totally right. It's a 911. It's a 992.
Yeah, there you go. E.
Yeah.
Say
Come
the
on
E.
Now.
Say the
Well, then I would have given it away, Doug. I'm not trying to just lay him up and make it look cool.
Too obvious.
Kind of like it's probably a 944, isn't it?
No, it's a 992 with an arrow kit.
All right, that's fine. I would have never ever gotten there. I'm thinking like e-tron, I don't know. This one came via Facebook submission, North Carolina plate.
Okay.
Camry with a question mark on their plate. I guess you get question marks. So
you can get question marks?
Camry?
There is something that is... Oh, no, no. Is this like an Elise or an Exige?
No.
Because it's got the end. Oh, okay. There is something that's in my head that is like essentially a Camry, but I can't remember what it is. yes, Doug, what is... You've got to stop. I can't. What is it?
Toyota Chaser.
See,
it's the JDM Camry. Yeah.
Okay. I like it. I like it.
Yeah.
I don't remember any of those JDM car names, though. The, like, Chaser, the Soarer, the... I know the Sentry, obviously.
Soarer is the SC300.
Okay. And then, yeah, that's all I got.
Okay.
For you, Doug, Visceral. V-I-S-S-S-R-L.
Shelby GT500 Super Snake.
Yeah, he's close. It's a GT350.
All right.
Dang it.
Getting there. Shelby's something.
Dang it.
Yeah. We need a points thing up here, a dinger or whatever.
Ding.
Okay. By officer.
Oh, that's got to be like it's a Corvette. It's a Charger. It's a Challenger.
No.
It's a Mustang.
No.
Ford GT.
No.
Lamborghini.
No. No.
Ferrari. What is it?
Lexus RC350.
I'm pretty sure the officer can catch up. That's not on me for not getting that one. All right.
I know.
This is.
Why do you think I
okay.
picked it?
All right. This is actually an Ohio plate that I have for you. I love it. It is Sans HP. S-A-N-S space H-P.
I was thinking like no computer. Like Hewlett Packard,
no,
right.
No
horsepower.
Yeah, no horsepower.
Nissan Figaro.
No.
Well, there could be a bajillion others.
This is a really popular one, though, that people usually complain is underpowered, even though it's a great enthusiast car. That
Acura
is still on
NSX.
Sale. No.
Audi R8.
Subaru BRZ. Way underpowered.
I've never heard anyone complain about their Subaru BRZ.
They only proclaim
that it's the greatest car ever made.
Because they're trying to drown out everybody saying that it is slow as heck.
Okay.
I've driven one. It was very slow. It's fun, just very slow.
California plate, no surprise here when you hear the plate, non-Musk.
Mach-E?
No. Right.
Kind of. Is it like a Lightning? Is it a
BMW i4.
Okay, yeah.
With an M, badge on it. Don't know what that does for an electric car, but bigger battery, I don't know.
Next up for you, Meetwgn.
Meat wagon.
Yep.
The Wienermobile?
No, that's good.
I thought you were bringing that back.
I think I ran out of Wienermobile plates, actually.
Wagon. Mercedes-Benz E63 AMG wagon. I don't know.
It's a hearse.
Ooh, that's insensitive.
I love it. Such a good plate. Another Ohio plate.
When you go to a singles convention, you're fresh meat. And when you go in a hearse, you're stale meat.
Stale.
No meat. Depending on how long after. Okay. this one from Aaron Tulin, regular submitter of good plates. Well, okay. I don't think it's well thy. It's spelled W-E-L-L-T-H-Y, well thy, but I think it's wealthy.
Oh.
Wealthy.
Wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
But spelled oddly.
Yeah.
Is this like a Genesis G70?
No.
Wealthy.
This fits into my stereotype, especially of Georgian plates proclaiming their wealth.
Mm. So this is like an Altima or something, or like a Sonata, or a Ford Taurus.
No, Mercedes-Benz.
Okay.
But not like AMG.
Oh,
remember people love up clouding on their base model Mercedes.
Yes.
This isn't totally base model, but it's a Mercedes-Benz G550. an older one. And just for kicks and giggles, not that I need to, like, a G550 is nothing to shake a stick at.
No, they're great.
But when you put wealthy on your plate, you open yourself up to being made fun of. Mm-hmm. So I ran the VIN, and sure enough, it's a triple digit mile, 100+ thousand mile G-Wagon, and it has a lien on it.
Nice.
So a person financed a super high mile G-Wagon. Again, nothing wrong with either of those things, but if you're going to brag about being wealthy, from experience in the car industry, the only people financing over 100,000 mile G-Wagons are financing at a 25% interest rate, and that's not wealth.
And they're trying to posture.
Right. We're making fun of people for posturing, lest anybody with a G-Wagon or who finances their car get upset.
Yeah. If Doug really disliked people who financed cars, we wouldn't be friends. All right, Doug, last one for you. First book. Boy, that silence was deafening.
He's thinking hard. Genesis.
Yes, there it is. I was really hoping you were gonna just like blank entirely on that.
But, no, it's a
Genesis.
Yeah. Okay. Last one from Richard via Facebook. Thank you very much. Zero, spelled out. Zero, the number one. 01.
01. What is that? 01.
I really need that. I just need to have that handy as a sound effect.
Oh, it's a General Lee?
Well,
or like a Charger or something.
It is
kind?
A newer, it's a 2008-ish Dodge Challenger in orange.
So why do, see, I got a bone to pick with these people. Why are all of the new things the Challengers when it was a Charger? I know the Challengers are two-door now, and the Charger then was two-door, but come on. Wrong car. Didn't Daisy Duke drive a Challenger, like a 71 Challenger or something? I don't know. Ugh.
Thank you for joining us for Switchcast with Doug Tabbitt and Tyler Sanders, produced by Ethan Huffnagel. Switchcast is an automotive entertainment and opinion show, and nothing we say should be taken very seriously. We do not give tax, investment, legal, emotional, or professional advice, and the only licenses we hold are driver's licenses. The opinions expressed on this show are exclusively held by the people pontificating at that moment and do not reflect the values of our producers or sponsors. Our theme music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their full album on Spotify or SoundCloud. If you like this show, you can stream it in its entirety on your favorite audio podcast platform. Check out switchcast.live for more info.